This is Jan Cox, talk number 696, recorded on September 5th, 1990.
First heading. Still speaking some about the idea of abruptness and the way in which it is tied to change, the appearance of change, the reality of change, and even loose change. Consider, even after we were talking about the fact that abruptness in the three-dimensional world is a form of, shall we say, an illusion, which is not, but shall we say that? Life lets people, lets men think about the idea of change and abruptness in two ways, two very distinct ways that the ordinary intellect operating in a polarized world does not see therein any conflict, as it should not. But that ordinary mentation can both think and speak about change as being possibly abrupt and being possibly quite gradual. And it sees no conflict. Such as someone can, the same person can do this, or it could be separate people operating within the same confines in the same city, the same environs, etc. But one person can do this. They could think about that they were going to quit smoking or drinking and think about, well, the only way to do it is cold turkey. I'll just stop. That's the only way to do it. And they could bolster this with extensive verbal play about, well, I've tried it before. I've tried it. And the only way to do it, my uncle tried, and he said, hey, I went through this and that. I took pills. And the only way to do it, you just got to stop. Person can think, person can talk about that kind of abrupt change, the possibility that he knows somebody that's done it. He can say, I can do it. If anybody can do it, I can do it. I got a will of, if not steel, at least fortified tin. I can do this. But the same person can then also, now catch this, can say, I certainly should stop drinking. But it's a medically known fact that your body has already built up throughout years of drinking a certain kind of tolerance and even dependence upon the input of alcohol into the system. And therefore, it can be medicinally dangerous. What I'll do is I'll go check myself into the Henry Ford Clinic. I will go to a place that will gradually wean you from alcohol. People can do it in ways and always have, let us say, in a more religious sense, that people still have the dream of abrupt conversion, that I will in some way, if I could join up, if I could go back to my forefathers' religion, if I could fulfill the needs, or if the gods would smile upon me, I could instantly be struck and turned into a better person. And coevally, simultaneously, a few seconds before, a few seconds later, a few seconds over in an oblique way that we will not try to describe, the same person can also think, talk, the system be filled with ideas of a kind of religious change, a serious change in oneself, is not being. Now, catch why, and they do not go back and deny the possibility of instant conversion. But the same person can also, we'll just put it spatially, sequentially, that is, at a different time segment in 3D space, that the same person's idea of even a religious change is not instant. The whole concept becomes one of fits and starts, and well, I'll try to do better, and I bet you I can. Well, I know I have in the past. I will start treating my family better, and I'll quit stealing gym clips at the office. But whilst saying that and thinking that, they also have the sure certainty in their own nervous system that it will be a matter of relapses. I will not, just because I start attending church again, just because I start going back to Mass twice a week, That's no sign I'm going to be a good Catholic again. I know probably for a few days I'll really be with it, and but I know what'll happen. It's life continuing to allow, as always, people to think about the apparent alterations possible of polarity, and they do not see that they are in conflict. I repeat again, don't get hung. They're not in conflict. It's not that a person should see that the only way to quit drinking or the only way to become religious is, by God, just do it. That's not right. That's not wrong. That is one polarization of what the intellect would call change. In this case, one's consumption of alcohol or one's apparent alliance with organized religion. It's not right or wrong, but they do not see that the alteration is simply a polarization of whichever one they started thinking. And thus the intellect is always left in any area, in the same way there's got to be two words for any one idea. There has to be two words for any one word. You understand that by now. If your word is sobriety, you can't have the word sobriety without tipsiness. But the intellect does not perceive, as long as it is tied to three-dimensional sequential thought, it cannot. It can't be taught. It is simply the electrical basis of it. It cannot see that what appears to be the possible alternatives in life are not alternatives. They're reverse polarizations of the same thing. Which, I might add, if an ordinary intellect could even be made to see that, would not affect any change in that intellect, because it would still be operating on the basis that all alternatives are nothing more than a reversal and a polarization of whichever one they started thinking about, whichever end of the magnet they grabbed. Before we move to a more, you might say, the positive end of how this can be used, consider, let's grab the negative end for a second. When people do think about the idea of change, the ordinary intellect, note that it doesn't really think so much about if change did occur, whether instantly or gradually. That they do, the ordinary intellect does not think so much about the change producing so much of a better person as it does of a lesser bad person. As your rabbi used to say, think about it a second. Just yourself, what you know from ordinary reading, just what people talk about, what would seem to be the common conventional wisdom of the ages. When people talk about, when the ordinary intellect thinks about some really substantial change, if you want the idea of instant conversion in a religious sense, if somebody has just become, as the Christians and others might have it, a new man, a different being. It is not so much that the change has produced a real better person. It's just like they're less bad. Do I have to continue? Because this is real subtle, or it wouldn't be fun. I wish there was another word which is not for real subtle, or a term, because it's not. Because real subtle, it gets to the edge of a three-dimensional cube, which let's say that that is what the ordinary intellect is skating on. And it gets up to the edge, and ordinarily just you go over and you're still hung on it through the process of being magnetized. And really subtle would be you go out to the edge of thinking on a 3D cube. Let's say it's your intellect, all humans' intellect, but yours, and it's floating here in five-dimensional space, and don't ask me what that is. And so we start talking about something, and I say something such as, this is real subtle, but real subtle would not be go out to the edge of where you'd ordinarily think, and then you just simply fall over, and you go, ah, ooh, hey, that was tricky. That kind of surprised me. Hell, a joke surprises you, the punchline. But really subtle is you got to the edge, and you expect, wait a minute, It's going to be something tricky. It's going to be something. And all you do is go that way. But you kept going. That's real subtle. Back to the subject. Now, let's be real subtle and not go back to the subject. Okay, let's be real subtle and I'll say, all right, back to the subject. And then I won't go back to the subject. All right, let's be real subtle. I'll say, let's go back to the subject, and I won't go back to the subject, but you weren't sure what the subject was to start with. But, until I point this out, so you don't know whether I'm actually going back or not, because I had just done the setup for this kind of little paragraph. So you see, now that's getting closer to being real subtle. And a fellow over here said, no, that's getting closer to being more confused than I even care to be. Thank you for your views. What I was trying to get you to consider, that the intellect, not through any sort of sociological, religious, institutional, cultural, racial, sexual, what the hell did I leave out? Shoe size based psychological impact on people. It's not that that causes what I'm saying. That is, that when the ordinary intellect thinks about a change in oneself, in a human, that the change is not so much that it produces a better person, this produces someone who is less flawed. This is on the basis, not of psychology in any way, but it's on the basis of how energy operates in a polarized environment. But I was going ahead, since that doesn't say much to the ordinary intellect, other than they can say, well, that makes sense if it was true. The sentence makes sense. But other than that, to go back to what would appear to be the kinds of easier descriptions, even though they're not psychologically founded. I was going to suggest you consider it this way, of why the intellect thinks about a positive change in oneself, the possibility, the picture, the dream that everyone has is not so much the picture that, boy, if I could change. Now, you got to hang in here for a few seconds. Because your ordinary intellect should have already been telling you, well, that's not true. All my dreams, everybody's dreams of being a better person, by its own definition, is to be a better person. Tut, tut. Tut, tut, really. And in a minute, I think you'll see why if you have a, it may take a psychological description. If the intellect could use the kind of fuel that was non-polarized, that is, that the idea of change, just the picture that an ordinary person has of change, the change in a person would be positive, of actually being a better person as opposed to simply being less flawed. If that were true, if that were possible, can I suggest on the basis of some of what we've been talking about of late, it would be getting too close to the possibility of abruptness. We would be getting too close to the possibility of a real conclusion. Because what you would have had, if it could occur, that if someone got changed through drugs or spiritual conversion or through some sort of miracle, and that they were suddenly the real living epitome of the dream of a change, that I laid down as one old tired being or spirit, and I arose after the great cosmic forces kissed me on the forehead. I arose and I was Snow White. No, I arose and I was a different person, a completely new man. If that were true, you would have what would amount to in a 3D world a true reversal of the polarity of the person. And the closest you're going to see to a true reversal, the closest of a polarity of a person is when you go to a place where they're real quiet and they have you laid out and you're dressed up and your hair is combed real nice. From a 3D view, that is getting about as close as there is to a reversal. I'm just going to leave this kind of weird and vague because I don't say anymore, but that's getting the closest. As long as you are still functioning in the AC-DC electrical field, that is, you're still alive on this planet, there is no such thing, may I suggest, as a true reversal. You cannot take the polarity of a person, whatever it may be, and it's not simply positive or negative, by the way. But there's no way to verbally, it's just a potpourri of all kinds of little possibilities within that. But if we took as a general label and call one person that they were polarized at the positive end, you cannot reverse them. That is, the change, the idea of an abrupt change, which would be a complete change, is not possible. The closest it is possible is to die at this level. Thus, even the dream is not possible. The energy is not there, the electrical energy is not there for the ordinary intellect to actually dream of a real positive change. Now, would any of you care to go back and consult, go back and dicker with your own old nervous system that's been talking to you thus far, or may have, in response to what I've been saying, that is, of naysaying it, and saying, well, I can picture a complete change. Anybody can. No, they can't. The energy is not there. The closest, and of course, the ordinary intellect has never been driven to couch it in these terms, but the closest the ordinary intellect does perceive of total abrupt change is death. That's the closest it comes. It doesn't call it that in that way. But notice all the ideas, the religious ideas, and most people's idea, or belief, faith, whatever they call it, is that after they die, they don't die. That they actually show up somewhere else. And it's that somewhere else, the idea of an afterlife, another life, is the closest ordinary intellect comes to any perception of a true change. And then it's still not a true change, you understand, but that's the closest. But then they just dream of things. All they can do is try and invert, reverse all that seems to be negative here. That paradise will be a place where you don't ever get sick. You don't ever get old. You never turn your ankle. You're never behind in your taxes. You never get overweight. You can eat all. And that's everybody's. You can forget the institutional version. It seems that every religion has some kind of tenets. But the people involved, if you ask them, do you really believe there's a, or do you hope there is? Do you kind of believe there's a paradise later? Yeah, I do. What's your feel about it? All they're going to do is describe the negative aspects to them. The electrical charge in their brain that attracts it. And all they're going to do, and they might not put it that way, they go, they might start and say, well, paradise to begin with is, oh, well, it's just paradise. That's why we call it paradise. Well, could you tell me more? I mean, specifically, a person. If I converted your religion and I did right and I got into paradise, what would I experience? What's it going to be like forever? Of course, forever, you understand, is the idea that there would never be a reversal and polarization again. It's the whole idea that all religions and gods are dealing not with small-time local matters, infinity. And then, of course, those who like to damn the oxymorons and call themselves religious thinkers within any sort of institutional system, they're the ones that say, if you think gods aren't somebody, or our God isn't somebody, he's the guy that thought of infinity, and you people, you can't even consider what it is. And sure enough, you go, think of something without any beginning or any end, which, by the way, I don't guess any of you ever noticed, but it's kind of intellectual parlor games for adults. That's all that is. But it's to say, well, you know there's got to be a God, because the idea of infinity is so outrageous. I mean, it's incomprehensible, is it not? And you could be John Locke's grandson and go, well, yeah. And they say, well. But it's not well. Well, some of you press on with that. The tricky part is I was going to infer the reality behind that kind of trickiness, that infinity, in some way, I've heard this said, I think. If not, somebody will say it now in the religious community, that just the concept of infinity in itself is some proof of God. If somebody hadn't said that, they're welcome to it. They will now. The idea of infinity is simply another idea, another way of putting the possibility. We're getting close to abruptness again, as if you hadn't lost your place, is the idea of infinity is really like the idea of polarity that cannot be reversed. Which side of infinity is just the other side of death. And of course, the other side of death with ordinary intellect is, hey, there is another other side of death. That my polarity is going to be reversed and I'm going to lay down and die. Ha ha! Except it's going to be reversed, and I'm going to show up somewhere else in paradise. And then paradise is going to be the place they can't ever reverse it on me. The idea of paradise is back where we were. If you ask the person, well, specifically, individually, what way would I benefit? What would be our experience? All they can do, or you think about it, rather than me talking about it generically, your ordinary intellect. Or if you want to, if you believe that you can get up on a stepladder and get any wise above your ordinary intellect, take your best damn shot. If you try and think, what would paradise be? And all you can think about is not really, now you at first might want to say, well, it would be a superior condition. Nah, it's just a lesser negative position. I won't be sick. Well, sure, you can call it, well, I'll be healthy, and go, I told you so. No, you didn't. Because you got no concept of healthy without being ill. And that's part of being here. And so I'll live forever. That's a positive thing. No, it's not. Because the only reason you say that is that you know you're not going to live forever. The ordinary intellect cannot conceive of what amounts to. If you could get outside a polarized environment, the ordinary intellect cannot conceive of real improvement. It cannot conceive of a better person. It cannot perceive of a better life. All it perceives is a life less flawed. A person less dented, less twisted. I'm not saying that's a correct view, but notice that's all the intellect can do, and it cannot notice it, even on its own. Because it would say, if you present this in such a way to ordinary people, and you said, well, I'm now the new pope, and here's the way we're going to express why you should be a Catholic or whatever religion. And all you did was point out that if you do all this, and you use terms that all you were inferring or all you were promising was you will be less bad, who would join? Could you get any interest? And so it's presented, and the ordinary intellect, as I was speaking for it to start with, would deny this and say, I can perceive of change. Everyone can perceive of positive change, or they would not try to change religiously, in gyms, self-help groups, changing jobs. Everyone has a perception of being better. They don't. You can call it that. I'll give you one last shot, because it's not playing with words. Not me. It's the intellect playing with words on the basis that they're all in a polarized environment. If we got outside of religion and all sorts of things and somebody just said, wait a minute, I am now back in school at night. I'm going back to get my master's so I can get a better job, so I can make more money, so I can enjoy life more, and screw all this stuff about being less bad or less flawed. I'm doing this to be a better person and to enjoy life more, to be richer. How about that? He could say to me. Yeah. Do I have to finish this? How can you be richer? How could you even think about being richer unless you had been less rich? Poor. The intellect can say, well, that is a positive change. If indeed I do finish school and I get a better position, I get into some real profession where I can make 10 times what I'm making now, that would be a positive change. There is no such picture as that being a better person. It's just being a less bad person. That is, I will be less poor. Well, if any of you are interested, here's the last shot. Probably all of you have heard this, or you should have, and it is based on reality. Self-made million and billionaires. All you got to do is ask them this in any way at all to encourage them, and they will one and all say, and some of you have read it and heard it, whether you're paying attention or not, that here it is, some guy that started off his own little cow chip or computer chip company nowadays, and he's now worth billions, one of the richest men in America. And they will ask, well, now that you've got it all, I notice you still work like a demon. You're still driving this old pickup truck to work, and you're one of the, yeah. But I'm going to tell you the truth. When you grew up in an environment like me, I know I look down there, and it says I'm worth billions. My bankers tell me that. And I'm going to tell you the truth. I feel like every morning I'm going to get up, And it's back to eating cold yams and warm beer for breakfast. When you grow up poor, you never get over it. They say that. And that is a crude reflection of the truth. And it's not based on money. It's based on what I'm telling you. That once you are polarized, once your intellect is thinking in a certain way, which everybody's is to varying degrees, I could do something different with people who were born rich. Because money is not the point. By just giving you an example that these people will admit it. They'll say, well, that's true. I know I'm worth billions. There's no doubt. And I don't know for a fact, but I'm listed as one of the world's 10 richest men. And I accept that. I believe that. But I'm going to tell you the truth. I still can't. I don't really accept it. I feel like I could lose it all and go back to being dirt poor. In other words, being rich to them is simply being less poor. It's not being better. It's being less flawed. The whole idea, to take it just a little bit further before we hit the positive part I was going to threaten you with, not just superior people, the whole idea of even a potentially transcendental or metaphysical superman, not just being a religious conversion, but people being superior beings. Well, let's make it simple. Ordinary is people's concept of an anthropomorphic deity, which is the same thing. They're pictures of God. If you ask ordinary intellect, still I'll assume I'm speaking generically for the ordinary intellect, and let's say up until now, still is arguing with me that, wait a minute, people do, they can picture positive change. You're just fooling with words again in some way. All right, try this then, Bunky. Even if there was some validity to my argument, then the ordinary intellect might say, well, you're going too far now if you're going to start talking about men's concepts of God. Because there, we have a clear picture. Well, reasonable men and women. We have some sort of clear picture of real superiority. Is that right? Is that right? What are the best shots? The people who wrote all the world's Vade Mecums, the great prophets, the scribes that history says went into major funks. I mean, moments of enlightenment. And the God spoke to them. And they wrote out all this. The people who came down, the Moseses and the Jesuses and everybody else that says, God talked to me. God told me what kind of guy he was. He sent down messages, warnings. What were they all about? What does God describe himself being, according to all religions? Think about it a second. I don't care what religion you know about or ever read about or grew up in. And if you can't think of direct quotes from your religion's Bible, think about just the general concept, the way it's taken in the Western world, the Judeo-Christian concept of Jehovah and God. What kind of guy is he? About the best you could say, and it's not just religion this part of the world, about the best that can be said for gods of all stripes would be, I'll speak for Jehovah, how about that, the Western God. About the best you can say is, he doesn't drink too much. Is that too sticky? I know they... All right. He can control his temper sometimes. How about that one? All right, that covered it. I know the drinking was a little sticky. I thought I'd pick a crude one to start with, although I know, as far as I know, the Bible never talked about God having a drinking problem. And of course, it does not. Men that talk to our God, the Western God, they didn't say that he ever complained about his temper. But see, he didn't have to. Just look what he did. Look everything about him. Him and God's all over the world is what I'm trying to point out. Is the gods. And of course, I was saying man's concept of God, but if we're talking to ordinary intelligence, they would say, well, wait, skip all that. You're trying to take away from his omnipresence and et cetera. Now, it's all right. Gods, whatever they said they were. Did they really announce by word or deed that they are better? The best you can say for him is, well, he doesn't drink too much. Sometimes he can control his temper. Sometimes. That's it. Can you hear that? It's not an attack. Nothing wrong with gods, nothing wrong with religions, nothing wrong with people. But they cannot even conceive of the ordinary intellect, if it was still trying to wrangle with me about this, not only cannot perceive real positive change in people, they cannot perceive that change would make me better. They can call it that, but all they're perceiving, all they're picturing is, if I really changed, if I really went on to a big change, I might not be quite as bad. So if he wants to argue with that, look at the idea of God, or look at God. You don't leave out the idea of. The gods present themselves all over the world at all times, not as better people. Oh, they can say it the same way as you could say, well, I could change and be better. The gods can say, I am God. That's why I'm better than you. All right, so they can say that. But then what? After that, what do all words and deeds show about the ideas of gods? Are the gods themselves? Not that they're better. They're less flawed. That is, they may be able to control their temper better than you can. They may not drink as much as you do. But that's it. Now, fearlessly on to what I was going to point out as being a more positive end of a polarized strip running through this minefield of the evening. How about if change in some way were possible? Easy change. And what came to my mind was, how about, what if there were in existence now on this planet a brain app? That we had something from the future that you could actually hook up to a human intellect the same way that you can get a bigger amp and hook up to your stereo, take it out of your preamp and all that. But we had something that would literally juice up your present intellect, that in some way you could plug into it, which is, by the way, a form of what they're playing around, dreaming about with artificial intelligence via computers and et cetera. But what if we had something right now, a brain amp, and individually you could plug up somebody and it would fortify, increase the present operations of the brain to stratospheric levels. Would that get the job done? Would we then be talking about serious? And of course, instant change, because all you got to do is throw that switch on, maybe run the gain up a little bit. Or maybe it doesn't have one, it's just, well, at any rate, maybe it has one you say, all right, throw it on and open that sucker up once you're plugged in. Now, seriously, because this is not just a joke. It's not now presently possible in a 3D world, but humans have been thinking about it. They thought about religion in a different way, and they're thinking about it now in the idea of artificial intelligence. But what if we could take your brain or anybody's, but your brain, the way it is operating now, the way in which you think, flaws and all, shortcomings and all, but we could hook it directly to this brain app, and it had almost infinite gain, just all you could stand, and we can turn up, we can fortify, put in new wattage, new power, electrical power, literally into your brain to take what you're doing, if it was like a receiver, like your home stereo. Take the signals, background noise, line interference, with everything going on, and just begin, let's consider it infinite, and begin to increase, literally, the electrical power here. Would that get the job done? Well, you roll your eyes and think about, huh? Now, although I made up the term, that kind of sequential, it is a lateral movement of energy. That's what's going on in electronics and 3D world, and et cetera, and it would be going on with this brain out. Now, although it's never been analyzed in this way, it is not untoward, and you should be able to hear it. Even an ordinary intellect, again, I would suggest, could hear what I'm saying rhetorically. if you picture the idea of a real change in a person, we'll still consider that they're civilized in the secondary world, and they're the kind of people that I'd be referring to as ordinary, would not be dreaming of a great change in themselves, an instant conversion, actually turning them in to a physically changed Superman, that they could not suddenly fly or walk on water and all that crap. That the change would be somewhere invisibly. They might want to say spiritually, but it would be in the nervous system. They could feel differently. They would think differently. They would be a converted person. They would be a true Christian, a real Jew, an unconditional Muslim, or just the smartest person, most enlightened person in the world. That's their idea of change. Then the change, anything they picture. See, remember, we're in paragraph 2 now. We're not talking about, we're not saying that change is not possible anymore. And I'm not saying that all the ideas of change are simply on the basis of being less flawed rather than being better. We're assuming not that the possibility is otherwise. We would take all that their internal systems do, the higher end of their nervous system, the limbic and the cerebral systems, the blue and yellow circuits, including their dreams of what it would be to be superhuman, to be a better person. And rather than just being dreams now, we'll take all this activity in the same way that your home tuner will pick up certain stations. And I don't mean just local stations, but they're only a certain band within the electromagnetic spectrum that is audible. And so your tuner will pick up everything there. So that is what your ordinary thought is, including the dreams of being extraordinary. So what would seem to be lacking is a certain kind of electrical joie de vie. You need more juice, right? So if we hook up this out, and in this kind of linear sequence, we increase the juice and the voltage, that would surely make the positive dreamed of change, would it not? Well, if you want me to answer in one word, would it? We don't have to stay around and do a great sardonic verbal dance and say, well, it sounds like it should, and wouldn't you expect it would, unless you figured I had some kind of rat hung up, hidden in the cantaloupe that's going to spring out, right when you think, well, yeah, that would make sense. It's going to sing happy birthday, and you open the cantaloupe, and a half-nude rat jumps out and embarrasses all the Methodists and other decent people there at the banquet. We could, or I could, paraphrase another great Southern philosopher and put it to you this way. Is it actually possible to go to a new home from here? Forget the hell about going back. Can you actually go to a new home from here? If you had unlimited access to additional amplification of what you presently are internally, forget physically, in this crude sense of being bigger or looking better, in here, what seems to be the unique, secondary, intellectual, spiritual life of man. If you could take everything you are now, including your dreams of being better, and go, and hook it up to my brain out, would that do what you dream of? What anybody dreams of? In a 3D, logical, polarized world, the answer has got to be probably yes. Jesus, yes. God, yes. It's got to be, right? Except don't forget that half-nude rat waiting in the cantaloupe, waiting in the cake, just as soon as everybody congratulates themselves and blow the candles out, and then the top, and then the rat jumps out. The rat stripper, but still a rat. I was going to say I'd answer in one word, and of course the one word is, what was it, frosting? Mm. Hardly. That sounds better than no. How about hardly? I feel that all of you agree with me that we are disproclived. Don't look it up and write me and tell me it's not there because I know it. I'm sure all of you are dispersuaded to pursue this much further. But realize, if you can, that there is a subtleness that runs off the 3D board, runs off the scale, runs out of all the measuring intellectual devices, when you're confronted with the question that if you could hook up your brain to an amp and take everything that you think, and I don't just point out the negative aspects, I was pointing out that there's garbage, not just in your brain, but in all systems. All electrical systems have got noise. There's garbage in there. Not just that, but your dreams of a world of no garbage. Your dreams of Superman. All of that is in here, and we amplify it. And then they ask, would that do what you imagine? Your brain, everything that the basis, the electrical basis of polarized brain operations, has got to say, well, yeah, it's got to. There is no, I don't see any way out. It would do it. And that even before I gave you the great cosmic response of course, the gods told me this, I'm just repeating it, hardly. Your brain wants to say, yeah, how can it be otherwise? That would be it. Whereas, if you have any possibility of ever knowing anything outside the world of knowing, you knew even before I talked about the stripper rat in the cake, you knew that something smelled. And yet, the whole idea of drugs, all kinds of self-help, hypnosis, meditation, praying to the gods, lighting candles, putting out the garbage. The whole idea is a belief that in some way, if I was plugged in to cosmic forces, or if the gods would pay any attention to me, what you're dreaming of is I'd get hooked up into this big old cosmic, this deified, this religious amp, and it would swoosh me away to great heights. Does anybody need it anymore? Do you realize you can take the best, the cleanest tuner in the world? Put up your tuner. They make them cost $4,000 or $5,000, just a receiver, not even like a tuner. And get right next to the station that's broadcasting. Down at the low end of the FM. The only station within hundreds of miles. And then get an infinite amp and hook this tuner up. And at first you put it on, and you have never heard such clarity received over the airways of FM music. But if you got, and you can listen, and you can't even measure with instruments you have any noise. The noise to signal ratio can't even be measured. But if you get an infinite amp and turn it up, I assume all of you know that paradigm. That zenith of reception coming over your FM receiver, this $5,000 little unit, all you got to do is put enough amps behind it, increase the volume, and you're going to hear noise. Because that's the nature of transmission. That's the nature of electricity. That is the nature of life. Even if, let's say your dreams of Superman, if you're the ordinary intellect, even if those dreams had some validity, and if they were amplified, that is, if a person attempting to be a great Muslim and going through all the rituals, if indeed in some way that began to produce more energy in them to where they could indeed be more charitable, be more broad-minded, more tolerant, be a better Muslim, if indeed that happened, and I'm isolating that one little part of their nervous system that did happen, you would have to increase the voltage, the wattage behind it. You'd have to have them hooked up to my brain out. All you got to do is push it far enough, and the noise, that is, from their view, from everybody's view, what would appear to be their flaws, their mistakes, the polarity of them being a Muslim, the non-Muslim, would then be increased. Do you understand? If you had the potential to be an intellectual Superman, and the only thing, your dream of an intellectual Superman, Batman, Captain Marvel, Dick Tracy, was your idea. In some way, you don't know how, and you just cannot shake it. Your idea of Superman, he has hemorrhoids. And finally, you get this brain out, and it blows it up, and suddenly he becomes. You get closer to actually being Superman. Can you imagine the pain? Because you can't dream of starting out with a little bitty Superman who has hemorrhoids. And then suddenly, you're able to get closer to what would appear to be a three-dimensional realization. And Superman becomes magnified 100 times. I don't want to be graphic about this. Maybe I should fix something more civilized. He had a little boil inside of his lip. Just a minor thing. But now, the idea of Superman, and you got to, well, just do it in three dimensions if you got to, that he is now a man with all these talents, your ideas of God, but now this little bull is the size of a Volkswagen. I don't have the nerve to say, did that help at all? I got the nerve. Do I have the stupidity? Sure. Did that help at all? How about a little combination of continuation of some things I was talking about, subversive history, manners, pseudo-current events, because I love pseudo-current events just like the rest of you. That is, events that seem to be current. Well, one of the continuations that we were recently talking about, you recall, we were mentioning the fact that man's secondary world, the world of the intellect, could be seen as being primary affairs going into attempted continual pursuit of a variety therein. And also point out that what appeared to be current affairs, historical events, that since variety is required for the secondary world to grow, and for life to grow, the secondary world of man has got to grow. And for all that to happen there, has got to be variety, and I point out, in areas that would apparently be external affairs, historical and current, of more repressive, tyrannical regimes, variety is always at a minimum. They want everybody, China under Mao, that kind of thing. They want everybody to dress alike. They don't want everybody to be rich. They don't have any. The art has to be all within certain guidelines. The music has to be a certain way. And, of course, those having nothing to do with politics, you got to shake yourself from the local basis of your own nervous system, having grown up here or anywhere. It's not that their political system is in some way inherently inferior. But it is that in areas of life's body that is normally referred to as political boundaries, nations, political systems, parties, when you have less variety, you have less growth going on. It's just a fact. It is a kind of stagnation as opposed to a place where there's a greater variety. And those of you who won't play history, it's of no consequence. Well, it's of consequence. You just can't do anything about it. But an area gets to where variety is so great, it's like history says, would you care to turn the end of the stick around? That is, when variety gets to a certain point, oh, I give you the blues. You'll die before it happens. But back to the areas where it would appear to be of so little variety that life is not growing. And the people finally, apparently, it all breaks apart, like you've been seeing happen in these pseudo-current events of the last year in Eastern Europe. It's just like suddenly the whole place, the people running it, the repressive tyrants and the political councils and the people, it's almost as though there were in a period of months that these whole countries, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Poland, Hungary, it's like they all got and went, that's enough of this crap. And they went, yeah, that's right. Jesus. You know, everybody kind of loosened their tie and, damn, get some rock and roll music on the radio there. Pull down all those statues and everybody take off Jesus Christ. Take off all those gray suits you're wearing. Go get some wild clothes. All right. That did happen. It does happen. It's nothing new. But it is based upon what I was inferring to you about variety is needed for growth and what variety was vis-a-vis the primary activities of life in man and how they come out in the civilized secondary world. One little thing that we did not know when we were talking about it was when you're dealing with an area such as is observably was observably extant even in your lifetime in Eastern Europe, as we were just talking about, not only will people there tolerate living under conditions for long periods of time, whole lifetimes, several lifetimes, not only will a group of people, a large group of people, not only tolerate living under that kind of repressive regime wherein there's very limited variety. Not only will they tolerate it, hell. They almost enjoy it. Which, if you're living at a place on the planet that would seem to be a polarized version of them, in other words, you living, let's say, in America or Western Europe, and apparently compared to what was going on a year ago in Eastern Europe, or 10 years ago under the aftermath of Mao, you would say, Jesus, how can those people stand that? If I was over there, I would have been shot by now. I wouldn't put up with that crowd. I could not live like that, and how could millions of people live like that? And many commentators, not just ordinary people, many political observers, historians, what do they call it, shake their head? How can this be? If you've already forgotten, I thought we had damn well established that there is a kind of resistance in the human nervous system to change. And one way to cut down the possibility of change is to cut down the possibility of variety. Why do you think so many people love prison? For those of you that don't know, people love prison. For those of you that have never been there, what a shame. For those of you that's never been in the service, close enough. How do these people, I mean, I can understand maybe a guy held up a little newsstand there on the corner when he was 16 and he did 5 years. Reform school, they threw him in a jail with adult criminals. Son of a gun got out 2 weeks later. About 2 weeks. Just timed, you know, have a few beers, find a few women. He walked back to the same neighborhood, held up another fruit stand, stood there. Everybody knew his face. What kind of idiot is that? Tut, tut. You don't understand. The jails are full of people that love it. And as much as we can talk about loving anything, if they didn't, they'd break out. And if you don't like that, how could people live, these whatever it is in East Germany, 10 million, how could they live for 40 years like that? Why don't they break out? Well, they finally did, but they went for 45 years and didn't. Because it's not simply a tolerance. There is a kind of affection for severely limited variety. Yeah, but you're too hip for that. You're too sophisticated. Yeah? Go home, that is, inside of your own, the main room where you live intellectually, and look around. That whole place, I'd be surprised if any of you have your internal apartment painted even as exciting as beige. And your neural uniforms would make those Mao suits look like they were flamboyant. They would look like the dress of the late 60s. You live in East Germany. Everybody does. That's why everybody loves everybody inside. You can just picture, when you go in to think, you just picture old Papa Joe, Stalin, that same drab suit like everybody else. And you don't know whether he's smiling, you don't know what he's doing. All you know is there's no chance of variety here. You don't have to worry about 1984 coming up on you or Big Brother watching. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to wonder, how can those people march over there in Moscow until they underwent their change and look up there and here's all these guys. If it's not Stalin, it's all of his damn successors, all of them. Look how drab. None of them have any taste for art, for music, for anything. They don't want us to do anything except dress as poorly as they are. Or at least they appear to be, and eat the same kind of stuff they do. But all the people march by, and they kind of wave. I hope you don't think this really has anything to do with politics. Substitute that platform out there on the Kremlin walls. Substitute that for the nervous system concept of God sitting up in heavens and up on some high platform. Now, Papa Joe, I like his. And of course, after the fact, you know now the man, as they call him, was a maniacal, bloodthirsty, killer of his own people. And there he is, smiling, in that drab suit, and all the drab people going. And they even interview people now in Russia that say, boy, I wish Stone was alive to now and straighten things out and kill some of us. They don't say that, but it's to cut down on the variety. People love to dance with one person, one idea. And the one idea, the better dancer partner it is, the ordinary intellect, the more it's dressed in a plain mouse suit. That kind of mask of a face that means nothing. That's what everybody wants to dance with. That is the way in which life grows, in a kind of conservative, limited way to where the ordinary intellect is, I'll say, offered a minimum of alternatives. That the idea of variety in one person's internal system is about down to the point of everyone living in a one-room apartment in East Germany for all of your life, thinking that beige is as exciting as it needs to be. I don't want any more. And that all your leaders, that is, all of your primary ideas, your controlling factors, should all be dressed in a plain gray mouse suit. And that you've got your choice. You can either eat potatoes hot or you can eat potatoes cold. Or for those that really get exotic, I just want to eat any potatoes today. The mystics of the world, aren't they? There is something of, I suggest, of operational benefit that we'll have to save till next time. As long as I'm there, if you won't keep your place, I'll try to pick it up there. Having to do with what appears to be the individual figures out there of these kinds of tyrants, the Papa Joes and the Attilas and the Caligulas and all these maniacs. And, of course, up to pseudo-current events, including those current events going on inside of your own East Berlin apartment of the brain, of what is apparently considered, without any objection or no great analysis, to be insanity. The madness of people, not just of the Papa Joes, but of madness within individual, everyday people. I guess that the local news show should be proud of me, shouldn't they? Isn't that a good enough teaser to get most people to tune in again next time? Hey, now we're going to talk about something that could be of personal importance to me, insanity. Well, notice I didn't ask you to raise your hands. Like, who would like to hear about, maybe we should talk about insanity, personal insanity and madness on a local level next time. Would you raise your hand? Notice I didn't do that. Of course, I didn't have to. Cindy, have you got those, you may roll it. Cindy, have you got those excursions handy? Are we on? Okay, you people out there. You know who you are. In all the cities, not just the new ones, not just, but even the older ones, New York, Miami, and L.A., since I've mentioned excursions, and we have people out there I know coming in and out that apparently get interested, and we have people here. We have gone back and picked out some of the excursions over the last few years. And I had them typed up. They're separated, and they're two or three to a page. You can see where they're separated. Karen's going to be sending out a copy of these 8 or 10 pages to all of you cities. Now, what I want you to do is do it like this. All of you who want to participate, and here, Karen's going to post it up on Wednesday here, but pick out once a week in the other cities whenever you're showing the tapes, whenever you people are getting together. And for the newer people that's been there long enough to be considered to be part of your little group meeting there, you know what I mean, not just strangers, but let them know, which they, I guess, will know by seeing this epilogue, that one of you people in every city be responsible. Hey, post it up somewhere, use them in order, and cover up, or else cut it out and just paste it up. Once a week, put up, just go in the order that these are, and put up one of them. Don't anybody talk about it. Don't any of you, even the older people, try to read it and describe it to newer people. And you newer people, read it if you don't understand it. Picture Papa Job. But try not to ask any of the older people unless there's a word in there or some description. If you're just absolutely convinced that there's some word that must have some sort of personal significance or my own connotation that you've got to ask somebody, go ahead. But try your damnedest not to. Try to read it and just deal with it as it is. Do you understand? And you older people up there, try your best not to get involved with discussing this. Unless somebody actually comes up and says, well, this word he must have made up, or he must mean something else, and without knowing exactly what he means, it makes no sense. Then maybe respond. But even you people, imagine that Papa Joe could be lurking in your own brain. So. But once a week, do it. And then you people, and then other cities that want to do this, then just do it, and they'll tell you how long to do it. But just once a week, if you want to, then there'll be a new one posted every week. And you'll see what some of the things that I used to send people out doing. Call them excursions, or little tasks, just you look at it, excursion. It's a little something to actually go do. And if you have any questions after this, you may send them in care of the late Joseph Ivanovich Stalin. No. I think that they will prove to be, I glanced back over and I had some of the people here in the group actually write them out from the tapes, from what I said. And so they attempted, and I feel fairly certain that they succeeded, to where they will make sense on the surface. Because I let other people translate, in a sense, what I said, and to put it as succinctly, directly, and as simply as possible. Oh, it is in Russian. Just to make it interesting. So those will be going out. I assume you'll be getting them about as soon as you get this tape. If not, none of it makes any sense, right? You either get before this tape or after this tape or at the same night as this tape. Or you decide in your collective wisdom now to take always the third, more occult approach and just decide, well, I won't have potatoes at all tonight.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.